All right, so Matt, what do you call Batman when he gets injured?
I don't know. Hurt Man.
Bruised Wayne.
Man, I couldn't come up with it.
Michael told me that one, so. Good, good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Not too bad, brother.
Good, good. So before we get into it and before I go off on some tangent like I normally do, we'll say go over to patreon.com and sign up to become a patron. You can click that link if you're watching the video right above my head, and it'll take you directly to our Patreon. You can sign up for one of our three levels. We've got a 1, a 5, and a 10. And no matter which level you choose, you're going to get a bonus episode a week. It's like a short Graveyard Tales episode. Mm-hmm. If we were looking into something and didn't have enough content for an hour at least, guess what? It becomes a Patreon, so you can still get the topic and talk about it. Then if you move up to 5, you get that. Plus, you get our ad-free audio and video versions. So if we have an ad, I'll post the audio and video on there. If we don't have an ad that we read, I will still post the audio version on there so that you don't get pre and post roll ads. So it's completely ad free if you go for at least the $5 level. Then if you move up to 10, you get all that. Plus you get our second show, Side Quest. And I have to say, Matt, it's selfish, but I love doing Side Quest.
I know, it's a lot of fun. We have a great time doing it.
Oh yeah. We do anything and everything that is not Graveyard Tales related. Every now and then it becomes Graveyard Tales related because we like the topic so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've played games. We've done trivia. We've eaten nasty stuff. I've given Matt nightmares with some stories that I've told him. And tonight we're recording one that I might give him nightmares too, but for a totally different reason.
Great.
So go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. I promise that you're going to enjoy it. Also, we don't say it on the intro very much, but go give us a rate and review. You know, 5 stars really help us out. And to those of you who have already rated us 5 stars, thank you. We love you guys. If you have not, wherever you're listening, just give us a 5-star rating, say something. If you love the show, 5-star rating and say something nice. If you hate the show, 5-star rating and say something bad.
Yeah.
It just, you know, I won't read them unless they're 5 stars. So if you want to get my attention, put a 5-star on there and then you can cuss me out. But on that note, Matt, this might be a lengthy episode. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Well, Adam, I don't know about you, but there are certain places on Earth that seem just determined to build a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Some places become famous because they're beautiful, some because they're historic, and some because they have really good marketing departments. But there are places that just seem to collect mysteries. You know, the kind of place that every generation adds another weird story to the pile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a missing person here, a ghost story there, weird lights in the sky, a creature no one can identify, just rumors that refuse to die.
Right.
And eventually you end up with a location that becomes bigger than the facts themselves. The stories just take on a life of their own. And so tonight, we're going to talk about one of those places, a place so remote that even today, most people cannot just simply drive there. This is a place filled with towering monuments, massive waterfalls, deep canyons, hidden caves, hot springs, glaciers,
yep,
and just thousands of square miles of wilderness. I mean, prospectors vanished here.
Yeah.
Okay. Bodies have been found under circumstances so bizarre that it earned one of the most unsettling nicknames in North America. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yep.
Now, trust me, before we get to all that, you have got to understand this place itself, because Nahanni isn't just a collection of spooky stories. And a lot of you, you know what we're talking about. I could already tell. We're going to talk about Nahanni National Park in Canada.
Yep.
And I mean, I came across this, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and just started kind of reading and reading, and was like, well, this is interesting. Well, this is interesting. Well, what's this story? And I was like, wait a minute. And I kept going, and I immediately sent it over to Adam, and I was like, hey, dig into this and see what you think about doing this on the show. I think this would be a great topic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, let's go for it.
Yep.
So tonight, we're going to talk about Nahanni National Park and the Valley of the Headless Men.
Gotta love it, man. Gotta love it. You know.
Like, what a name. Jeez.
Yeah, you know, if it's got a name like that, we're talking about it on Graveyard Tales.
100%.
But as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information, and anything we talk about is sourced and referenced in our sources down there. So you can find it there if you want to keep going with the information, because there's probably stuff we're leaving out for time's sake, because this place has a history and I can't get into all of it. But there are places in the world that feel old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just historically old, not just ancient in the way a ruin or a battlefield feels ancient, but old in a deeper way. Old like the land itself is remembering something. Old like the mountains have seen people come and go, watched rivers carve through stone, watched animals move through valleys, storms tear across the ridgelines, and watched human beings step into the wilderness thinking they understood it, only to realize they didn't understand anything. And deep in the Northwest Territories of Canada, far from highways, cities, and far from the noise of modern world, there's a place like that. That place is Nahanni National Park Reserve. And Nahanni is not just another beautiful wilderness. It's one of the most dramatic landscapes in North America. It's one of Canada's great protected wild places, and it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Now, we'll talk about it.
We've talked about a lot of UNESCO World Heritage Sites lately.
I know.
And we did not go to the website and just start picking out places and say, let's do a show about this.
Right.
It has just happened organically, I promise.
I know, and I don't, now that you mention it, I don't know why, but I guess we're like, let's look into it. Let's look into, you know, a lot of history stuff. Oh, it's all UNESCO. Now, we'll talk about it, but it's home to grizzly bears, wolves, caribou, moose, doll sheep, all kinds of fish that move through cold northern rivers. But Nahanni is also famous for something else. It's legends, it's disappearances, old stories, and like Matt said, its most infamous nickname, the Valley of the Headless Men. So before we get into the mysteries, though, we've got to understand the place itself. And Nahanni is interesting. The park sits in the southwestern part of the Northwest Territories. And when I first read that, Matt, I was like, the southwestern, northeastern, southern, western. It's one of those places I always think, like, if you're driving north on Southwest Street, you know, you're like, north on Southwest Street. I'm going north on Southwest Street East. What?
a buddy of mine in high school, they had to fill out one of those little bios for the yearbook, you know, and he wasn't headed to college. So he put on there that he was going to Northeast Southwestern State. And nobody caught it, so it printed out there.
See, that's exactly how I feel. And that's what popped into my head when I saw that it sat in the southwestern part of Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
But it's near the border with Yukon and British Columbia. Now, it's enormous. It's roughly 30,000 square kilometers of protected wilderness. That's bigger than a lot of countries, Matt.
Yeah.
And inside that boundary, there are very few signs of modern development. No sprawling towns or easy road access. No convenience stores, gas stations, tourist strips. Nahanni is just wilderness in the truest sense of the word. Now, at the heart of the park is the South Nahanni River. It's a river that cuts through the landscape like a living thing. For hundreds of kilometers, it winds through valleys, mountains, and deep canyons, creating one of the most spectacular river corridors anywhere in the world. And yep. What makes, I mean, look at pictures of it if you haven't.
I've got one up right now.
Do you?
And I'm looking at it and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Because the canyon, it's narrow. Mm-hmm. Canyon goes up on both sides. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then I look at the bottom of the picture and there's two kayakers at the bottom and they are like microscopic.
Yeah.
And I'm going, holy cow.
Yep.
It's like the never ending story when he has to run through the thing with the oracles on either side,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, golly, look how little he looks. That's what this looks like.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the river so fascinating is that it may be older than parts of the mountains around it. So as the land rose over time, the river didn't just change direction and flow around the mountains. It cut downward. Slowly, relentlessly, it carved into the stone beneath it, created what Matt was just talking about, that deep canyon on both sides. And over immense stretches of time, that process created the giant canyons that Nahanni is famous for. So the river just said, this is my path.
Just cut it through.
Get out of my way, and just decided it was going to plow through the mountains. Now, the South Nahanni River passes through four major canyons, and in places, the walls rise thousands of feet above the water. So imagine floating through a narrow river gorge, the water cold and fast, with sheer stone cliffs towering over both sides of you. The sky becomes a narrow strip overhead, and the river echoes against the canyon walls. So the world outside just disappears. That is Nahanni. So I can't imagine, Matt, being in that kind of place where the sky is just this narrow strip above you because the walls are so high. That seems crazy to me. Now, the park's most famous landmark is Virginia Falls, known traditionally as Nailicho. Now, the waterfall is massive, around 315 feet high, more than twice the height of Niagara Falls. The South Nahanni River gathers itself and then crashes over the edge with unbelievable force. And at the center of the falls stands this huge rock formation called Mason's Rock, splitting the water into two roaring curtains. So they say that the sound there is overwhelming. But mist will rise from the base as the air trembles, and the river that seems powerful already becomes something violent. And around it, there's nothing but wilderness. So no skyline behind it, no tourist boulevard, just water, stone, forest, and sky. That's all you got. But Nahanni is not only a river and canyon landscape, its terrain changes dramatically from one area to another, like Matt was talking about earlier. To the west are the Mackenzie Mountains, rugged and remote, and with peaks rising over 8,000 feet. These mountains are part of the larger northern Cordillera, and they help give Nahanni its harsh, isolated character. At higher elevations, forests thin out into alpine tundra, Glaciers cling to remote valleys, and snow can linger well into warmer months. Then there's the karst landscapes, which we've discussed this before, but Nahanni contains some of the most impressive cold climate karst terrain on Earth. Karst forms when water slowly dissolves soluble rock, especially limestone. So over time, that process creates caves, sinkholes, underground river springs, and these weird-looking rock formations. In Nahanni, that means the land isn't just dramatic on the surface. It's dramatic underneath as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's cave systems, hidden passages, and places where water disappears into the ground only to emerge somewhere else, which is cool. It drops into like a hole, and then a little bit later down the line, you see it popping back out. There's sinkholes that open into the earth, springs that rise from the mountainsides, and rock formations that give the landscape an almost otherworldly feel. Then, my favorite part, Matt, the hot springs. In cold northern wilderness like Nahanni, the idea of the steaming hot water rising from the earth seems impossible, but Nahanni has geothermal springs that create tiny pockets of warmth in an otherwise harsh environment. So around these springs, you get plants that grow in conditions that are unusual for that far north. I love hot springs. I love geothermal stuff like in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. Always love that.
Yep, me too.
So in one park, you have glaciers and hot springs, deep canyons and high alpine peaks, dense boreal forest and barren tundra, rivers, caves, waterfalls, and stone towers. And one of the most famous of those stone landscape is Cirque of the Unclimbables. Even the name sounds like it's out of a legend.
Cirque of the Unclimbables. I mean, come on.
And I tell you what, it's unclimbable for me because I ain't trying it. Now, the Cirque of the Unclimbables is a remote mountain basin filled with enormous granite spires and walls. These cliffs rise sharply into the sky, attracting climbers from around the world. The most famous of these formations is Lotus Flower Tower. It's a sheer granite wall that has become legendary in the climbing community. But for most people, the Cirque is not a place that they will ever stand. It's too remote, too difficult to reach, and it's too far removed from the ordinary world. And that remoteness is part of what defines Nahanni. This isn't a park you casually wander into. This is a place that demands respect. And long before prospectors, explorers, pilots, climbers, and tourists came to Nahanni, indigenous people knew this land. The region has been part of the traditional territories of the Diné for thousands of years. So the river valleys, hunting grounds, trails, and mountain passes were known, used, and remembered through generations. Indigenous knowledge of the region runs far deeper than any map. For the Diné, this was not an empty wilderness. It was their home. It was a place of travel, hunting, stories, and survival. And the land carried meaning. The rivers had names, the mountains had histories, and like many old landscapes, Nahanni held stories that blended memory, warning, and mystery. Now, one of the most famous traditions connected to the region involves the Naha. According to Diné oral traditions, the Naha were a feared people who lived deep within the rugged wilderness surrounding the Nahanni River. Now, Matt, think about this as I get into this story. Does this not remind you of the red-headed giants that we talked about? So,
oh yeah, it really does.
It does. Unlike most groups who traveled and hunted along the river valleys, the Naha were said to make their homes high in the mountains, in places few others dared to venture. All right, Matt. So let's take a second and talk about our newest sponsor, Forkful Meals. Now, here's the thing. We all have a crazy schedule. And I know, Matt and I talk about it all the time, how crazy our schedule is. the hardest thing to do with a crazy schedule is find something to cook. And Ashley and I feel like utter crap when we eat out nowadays. So we try to cook at home, but then that pushes us till late and we don't even cook the greatest meals. So thankful that we found Forkful Meals, because they have a plan that will fit your life, goes from 6 to 20 meals per week, and it starts as low as $9.60 per meal. And the bigger you box, the more you'll save. And they send you all sorts of stuff. They got a bunch of different types. We pick the high protein thing because we love getting the extra protein for our workouts and stuff like that. If you can't tell, I'll show you my muscles on video later. But they have blueberry pancakes with eggs, sausage, and bacon as an option. They also have a smoky chipotle shredded chicken with baked sweet plantain, which I love. Any meal I can get sweet plantain in, I'm all about.
You're making me hungry. And with Forkful, you get meals that prioritize flavor, function, and health. Zero seed oils, chef-cooked, fresh, never frozen, ready-to-eat meals made with high-quality premium proteins, grass-fed bison, wild-caught salmon, and fresh vegetables. These are delicious meals that fit your lifestyle and meal preferences, including gluten-free, dairy-free, keto like me, plant-based, GLP-1, and low-carb meals. So eating well doesn't need to be complicated. With fully prepared, deliciously healthy meals, no meal prep, cooking, or cleanup, just clean flavors and ready in under 3 minutes. Explore Forkful's plans and menu of fresh, ready-to-eat meals at ForkfulMeals.com and use code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, to get 50% off your first order.
That's ForkfulMeals.com/GRAVE and use our promo code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, for 50% off. Thanks to Forkful for sponsoring this episode. Stories describe them as fierce warriors and skilled hunters who move through the mountains with incredible ease. They would reportedly appear without warning, descending from the high country to raid neighboring communities before vanishing back into the wilderness as quickly as they had come. Over time, the Naha gained an almost legendary reputation. To many, they became more than just another tribe. They became figures of mystery, people who seem to belong to the mountains themselves. What's especially fascinating is that no one is entirely sure who the Naha actually were. Some historians believed they may have been a real indigenous group whose story grew larger through generations of retelling. Others think they may have been ancestors of the modern Kaska Dena, and some researchers believe the legends may represent memories of several different groups that are blended together over centuries. But the strangest part of the story is how it ends. According to the legends, the Naha eventually disappeared. The feared mountain warriors who once dominated the region simply vanished from the historical record. No one knows exactly where they went or what became of them. The mountains of Nahanni already had a mystery of their own. Whether the stories preserve memories of a real group, a conflict, or something more symbolic, they became part of the region's reputation. Nahanni was not only beautiful, it was dangerous. It was powerful and a place where people could disappear. And when outsiders began entering the region in search of gold, that reputation grew darker. So, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, prospectors pushed into the remote northern regions, hoping to strike it rich. As always, gold fever had a way of making men ignore the distance, weather, starvation, and common sense, to be honest. The promise of treasure could pull people deep into country that they didn't truly understand, and Nahanni was one of those places. The South Nahanni River and its surrounding valleys became the focus of stories about hidden gold, lost mines, and fortunes waiting somewhere in the mountains. But men who came looking for wealth sometimes found something else. or they were never found at all, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about a little later. Teaser. So by the 1960s and early 1970s, there were proposals that could have dramatically changed the South Nahanni River, including hydroelectric development. Conservationists recognized that this landscape was too extraordinary to lose. The waterfalls, the canyons, the river, the mountains, and the untouched ecosystems made Nahanni nationally and internationally significant. Well, in 1972, the Canadian government moved to protect the region. And Nahanni Park Reserve was formally established in 1976. Then, in 1978, Nahanni became one of the first places in the world designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. That recognition placed it among the planet's most important natural areas. Originally, the protected park area was much smaller than it is today. But in 2009, the park reserve was massively expanded, growing to more than six times its original size. That expansion helped protect not only the South Nahanni River corridor, but a much larger surrounding wilderness. And that matters because it's not just scenery, it's habitat. The park protects incredible varieties of wildlife. You know, in the forest, wetlands, mountains, and river valleys, large mammals move through the landscape much as they have for centuries. There's grizzly bear that are among the most powerful animals in the park. Moose browse in wetland areas and along waterways. And wolves are actually known to move through Nahanni as well. In a wilderness this intact, wolves are not just animals in the background. They're part of the structure of the ecosystem. So there's wolverines, Matt. Mm-hmm. Wild wolverines.
I've never seen a wild wolverine.
Well, I've seen them in the zoo, but I've never seen them in the wild. It would be cool. The bird life there is impressive. They got bald eagles that hunt over the river, peregrine falcons, owls, hawks, and ducks. Peregrine falcons fascinated me as a kid. And I don't know why, but I loved peregrine falcons.
Are those the ones that people would keep and put the little helmets on?
Peregrines, I don't think so.
Okay.
I've only
they're
known
kind
them.
Of smaller, right? Yeah. I don't know. I'm talking out of my rear end. I know jack all about birds, but.
Well, falcons are generally smaller in general, but.
Whenever I hear falcon, I always think of like an old Bugs Bunny cartoon where the dude's got the big glove and he's got the little, a little falcon on there.
With a blinder hood on.
Yeah. He's got this little like helmet on, like covering his eyes, you know, and he takes it off and it freaks out, you know?
Yep. Well, I heard about peregrines as a kid, and for you younger people, this was before the internet. This was before, you know, if you wanted cartoons, you had to wait till Saturday morning. But to pass time, I created my own superhero, who I was, and I was modeled after a peregrine falcon instead of a bat. I was modeled after a peregrine falcon.
We need some pictures of this.
Yeah, we do, but ain't going to happen unless AI makes it. So. 'Cause this was also before the time of a camera in every pocket, so. Now, when people talk about Nahanni National Park Reserve, it's easy to focus on the scenery, you know, the waterfalls, mountains, and forests. But honestly, I mean, that's understandable because few places in North America can match the raw beauty of this landscape. It's one of the last great wildernesses left on the continent, a place where grizzly bears can still roam, wolves can still hunt. But the thing about Nahanni is that the beauty is only part of the story. Because for generations, people haven't just traveled here to see the mountains or paddle the river. They've come here chasing something. Adventure, gold, answers. And sometimes, they never came back. The indigenous people who have lived around the region for thousands of years knew these mountains long before maps existed. Early explorers and prospectors learned quickly that Nahanni was a place that demanded respect. The landscape itself can be unforgiving. Distances are immense. Weather changes without warning. Rivers become deadly, and entire valleys can make a person feel utterly alone. Standing in Nahanni today, it's easy to understand how stories begin. Just imagine the endless forest stretching beyond your sight, the rivers disappearing into deep canyons where sunlight only touches the water for a few hours each day, campfires burning in the darkness with nothing but wilderness in every direction. It's the kind of place where legends feel possible. The kind of place where every strange sound in the night feels a little louder. And that's exactly what you get when you stay in this kind of place. And because the wilderness is only the beginning, let's pass it over to Matt to tell the rest of this.
All right, Adam, you know, that it's just incredible, you know, that much wilderness exists. And, you know, it makes me feel good that humanity is protecting it, you know, because you and I know we both live in more. I mean, I certainly don't live in a rural area. I don't think that you could say that either.
No.
You know, if the land stands undeveloped long enough, they're going to build, you know, a strip mall on it. You know, how many fast food joints do I need? You know, we got a pharmacy everywhere we turn, you know, that is one thing is crazy. If you come to my town, you can, if you need drugs, legal drugs, maybe the other, or Mexican food or pizza, you are set for life. Okay. Every time you turn around, it's a new one. You know, there's no stretches. So I like to see
that
there are places where you can literally go and get away from all of it.
For sure.
Every little bit of it.
And my problem with the building stuff is they will build buildings in a parking lot without something going in and say place for rent.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they have nothing planned for it.
Yeah. No, stop putting concrete in.
Yeah.
I don't need any more concrete.
That's right. Put some trees over there and let's call it a day.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you listen to everything that Adam just laid out about Nahanni, the mountains, the canyons, the isolation, the legends of the Naha, okay, endless wilderness, you can already kind of feel your brain starting to work against you because Nahanni is exactly the kind of place where if somebody told you they saw a ghost, you'd think, yeah, probably. I mean, you know, I mean, let's face it. I'm looking at a picture of this canyon and these minuscule kayakers. Yeah, there's a chance there's something down there. You know, yep, I'm not 100% sure I'd be down there. Okay. But if they said something like, we were camping and we thought we could hear people talking outside our tent. Yeah, probably. I believe that. We were on a hike and we saw some strange lights. Okay. We found evidence of an unknown creature. I believe it. You know, it's just the kind of place where your imagination doesn't really need a lot of help. Okay. But here's where things get interesting. Because unlike a lot of the haunted locations that we cover, Nahanni didn't earn its reputation because of ghost stories. It earned its reputation because people started dying. And not normal wilderness deaths, you know. These are not, well, they died of exposure, okay? It's not guy died lost in a snowstorm or a bear attack. These are the kind of deaths that make people say, wait a minute, what exactly happened to him? So that brings us to the Valley of the Headless Men. Now, if you've ever watched one of those paranormal documentaries that comes on at about 2:30 in the morning, and you've probably heard Nahanni referred to as the Valley of the Headless Men. And honestly, it totally sounds like something that a TV producer just made up, to hook you in. Valley of the Headless Men. Yeah. Click over on that channel. But it wasn't. The nickname came from actual events. The most famous story involves two brothers, Frank and Willie McLeod. Now, around the turn of the 20th century, gold fever had infected northern Canada, and people were hearing stories of rich deposits hidden away in these remote valleys, like lost mines and hidden fortunes. The kind of stories that convince perfectly rational people to walk into some of the harshest wilderness on earth carrying a shovel and a dream, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the McLeod brothers headed to Nahanni searching for gold, and then they disappeared. But years later, searchers located their remains. And according to the reports that spread throughout the North, both men were found without their heads. Now, historians have debated this story for decades. Records from that period, they're not perfect. And some accounts conflict with others, but the essential story remains the same. Two prospectors entered Nahanni. Two prospectors never came home. And when their bodies were eventually discovered, the circumstances were horrifying enough that a legend was born. And suddenly people weren't talking about a beautiful river valley anymore. They were talking about a place that could be cursed. A place that just didn't want visitors. Okay. Mm-hmm. It protected its secrets. And once that idea gets into people's heads, every strange event afterwards just feeds that legend.
Oh yeah.
Because that's exactly what happened. More people disappeared. More people died, and every new mystery added another layer to the story. Now, one of the strangest cases happened in 1917. A prospector named Martin Jorgensen had established a cabin near the Flat River. And like so many others, he was searching for gold. Then one day, smoke was spotted. When people investigated, they found his cabin burned to the ground. And nearby, not inside, nearby were Jorgensen's remains. And according to the stories that spread throughout the region, he was missing his head.
Of course he was.
Again. Again with the no head thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
makes you wonder if it's not something paranormal. Is there a bear out there who just loves head?
Yeah.
That came out completely wrong. I don't know how to fix that, so I'm just going to...
You can't.
Yeah, I screwed that one up. I meant like...
I'm sure there's one out there somewhere.
I'm sure. I screwed that all up. I think y'all know what I meant.
We know what you meant. That's why it's funny, is because we knew what you meant to say.
It's just not what you said, yeah, Adam.
That's right. But you brought it up, though. It sounds paranormal, okay? It does. But I'm not saying there's some like supernatural force out there that's wandering around collecting heads, you know, like Pokemon cards. But if you're a prospector and you're hearing this story sitting around a campfire in 1918, you are probably reconsidering what you're out there doing, okay? Especially because no one really ever came up with a satisfying explanation. You know, was it murder? Maybe. Or was it animal scavenging? Well, that's possible too. Was it an accident? Yeah, how many accidents did two guys lose their head? And then maybe a third.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, all of those explanations are as valid as another because there was really not enough evidence to point definitively to one or the other.
And like you said, coincidence doesn't seem to work with three people losing their heads.
Not over a 20-year span.
No.
You know, that seems kind of odd. You know, if they had happened closer together, then that would lead me to think, okay, these are other prospectors and you're getting a little too close to their thing. And so this other prospector or prospectors, they take out the McLeods, cut off their heads, and when they're found finally, you know, now this story is born and these guys are like, this is going to keep people out of our area. But how many of these prospectors that would have done something like this stuck around for that length of time to kill another guy and cut his head off too? If it had happened in the next few years, I'd buy that. But, you know, 10, maybe 15 years later, I'm not 100% sure that, you know, they didn't take all their gold and go and live a comfortable life. So, I mean, animals, it could be. Let's say if the McLeods died and the animals ran off with their heads, that's a possibility. I don't know how many animals would just take the head.
Usually, if there's the whole body there, you would think they wouldn't because the skull is very hard to get into.
Right. Like, I mean, there's not a lot of meat on somebody's face.
Right. You might get birds get their cheeks and their eyeballs, but if you've got a whole body,
yeah,
why wouldn't you? Like, they're going to go after the liver and stuff like that, not the skull.
Yeah.
Try to crack into that
the
thing.
The thighs and the biceps, you know, and of course, the trunk. You know,
not if it were me, not my buttocks. There's not enough meat there. I don't have a good butt.
My question would be, is what kind of scavenging animal could get a head disconnected from the spine?
True.
I mean, even with decomposition, it's still going to be attached to some degree. I mean, and what were they doing with it? You know, can you imagine a bird comes down and just swoops and grabs the head and it's toting this head? Two birds, two different heads. Okay. Yep. And they're flying around with these two poor guys' heads.
It would definitely be ravens if that were the case.
Yes. Two ravens carrying human heads came flying out of the canyon. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we're not coming back here. You know, this place is going to get a terrible Yelp review. You know,
right.
Yeah, pull up the TripAdvisor app. You know, we're
quote the Raven.
We're in 30,000 kilometers of wilderness, Dad. when we get back, you know, we're gonna light them up.
Yep.
So no, I don't see it. It is strange. Like I said, I'm not saying there's anything paranormal. It's just extraordinarily strange that the bodies were found without heads. And there's always a possibility that this was just completely exaggerated.
True,
but. It's, you know, kind of an odd thing. I mean, you know, it would have been real easy for somebody to go, hey, we found the McLeod's remains, or at least what we think is them, and they were dead. Why would you include the fact that they didn't have their heads if they did, or if their heads were just detached but close? You know, that's not so much of a mystery. It's more a mystery. How did they die? Now the mystery is how did they lose their heads?
Right.
Okay. And then a potential third one in 1917 and no head. Now you really see where the stories just go and just they go from there. Now, the story here takes a little bit of a turn into more of a classic treasure hunt story. Because after the McLeod brothers died, rumors began spreading that they had actually found what they were looking for. A rich gold deposit, maybe an incredibly rich gold deposit, maybe one of the richest in Canada. But the problem, no one knew where it was. So the location would have died with them. So now you get the legend of the lost McLeod mine. Now, if you've listened to Graveyard Tales for any length of time, you know this is exactly how every cursed treasure story begins. Someone finds treasure, that somebody dies. No one knows where the treasure is. Everybody spends the next 100 years trying to find it.
Yep.
And occasionally die while trying. The Lost McLeod Mine became the holy grail of Nahanni. prospectors kept going into the valley searching for it, and some even claim that they have gotten close, but others claim that they found clues. But no one ever produced the mine itself. And over time, some people began to wonder if maybe something was protecting it.
Like, how would they know if they've gotten close?
That's what I wonder. I got close. I guess, you can find gold, and maybe you find an area that has more gold than another, and then you begin to wonder, am I getting closer? That's the only thing I can think of. I don't know anything about prospecting or finding gold. So
no.
But I do know.
The got close seems weird to me.
Yeah. But I do know a little bit about this. Curses.
Yep.
And people began to wonder if there was a curse on the area that was preventing other prospectors from finding the location of the McLeod mine. Some believed that there were spirits, like the ghosts of the McLeod brothers themselves, protecting, their riches. But maybe, just maybe, it was one of the most unforgiving wilderness regions on Earth. And being able to dig around for any length of time and survive long enough to find this mine, if it existed at all, was just too tall of an order.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm betting on the wilderness. Okay.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm not saying there's not some weird events around the McLeod brothers' death, but, cooking up the idea that there was indeed a lost mine up there and that people haven't been able to find it because it's cursed or there's ghosts that are protecting it. I'd say, man, you are looking for less than a needle in a haystack here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A needle in a needle stack.
Yeah. And truth is, curses are a lot more fun. I mean, it is.
True. We did a whole episode on them.
We did. So now, we brought up ghosts, so let's talk about ghosts. Because over the years, a number of visitors have described Nahanni as having what can only be called a presence. I mean, not necessarily seeing anything, and not necessarily hearing anything, but just feeling something. A sense that they're not alone.
Mm.
I dare say if you're out in this kind of wilderness, you are never alone.
True.
Whether you see what's looking at you or not.
Yeah.
There is something
human
looking at you.
Yep. I'd be willing to bet it's not a human, but something's watching you.
Yeah. That sense of being watched is real. And yes, you are being watched. It may not
There's
be by
raven
some kind of haint.
Waiting to, it's a raven watching you to take your skull.
That's right. That's right. Man, I got a good collection over here. I'm watching this guy.
He's got a nice round head. Yeah. I could use that.
And that one over there, he didn't have any hair. He may be kind of tougher to, I might have to drag him by the nostrils.
Grab the beard.
Yeah. But there are these reports over and over that the valley itself is aware of your presence. And before you just dismiss that, remember where we are, okay? Massive canyon walls and this constant wind, isolation, and then darkness, no highways, no city lights, no background noise. And when you remove all those distractions that we experience every day, your senses, they heighten.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes they notice things. Real things. Now, sometimes not. But one of the most famous reports of this comes from a geological expedition in the 1940s. Members of an indigenous pack team reportedly became frightened after seeing pale figures move through the valley at night. Like white, human-sized shapes moving through the darkness. Now,
that's creepy.
Could there be regular explanations for this? Of course. Could it be the moonlight, mist in the mountains, or just optical illusions from, being out in the elements and, kind of getting disoriented, exhaustion? Any of those things could occur and explain what this PAC team witnessed. But the witnesses found this experience to be disturbing enough that they wanted to leave. And that reaction is hard to ignore. You know, one person experienced something, spooking themselves and then leaving. That's one thing. Okay.
Yeah.
But a PAC team, an indigenous PAC team. And we've always said that if anybody knows and understands the land and the wilderness in a certain area, it's going to be people of the indigenous tribes of that region. You know, they are going to be, you know, intimate with the land that's there. And, you know, they know the wildlife, you know, they know the terrain, they know the waterways, everything. You know, they have that deep knowledge. So the fact that these people got spooked and left, that kind of makes me go, maybe it was more than just fatigue and, you know, an optical illusion. Because you would almost think that they would be expecting something like that.
Right.
You know, and that somebody in the group would have said, you're just tired. Okay. You're seeing things, you know, let's get some rest and we'll look at it with fresh eyes tomorrow, instead of going, something wants us out of here, so we're going to go home.
Yep.
Now, another recurring phenomenon that is the presence of unexplained lights. And this is where things kind of get Skinwalker Ranchy, okay? For decades, trappers, hunters, prospectors, even pilots have reported seeing lights in remote sections of Nahanni. Lights moving where no camps existed. Lights appearing on ridgelines. And lights changing direction. And a lot of times they're described as being way too bright to be natural. Okay.
That's weird.
So it's not swamp gas. So don't even come at me with that. Okay. So before we start jumping into, hey, it's aliens. Okay. Let's kind of look at the fact that there are a lot of possible explanations for this. Atmospheric effects being one, and temperature inversions causing some lights, distant campfires, which we've talked about this one before, where a campfire way off in the distance in a wide open space can appear to be much closer than it actually is. Okay. Reflections is another one. So if you've got, you know, really tall sheer rock cliffs, if you've got water, you know, chances are light can get trapped in there and kind of bounce around. And, you know, to an observer at a distance, it looks like it's moving. It's not where it's supposed to be, all of those things. And even the aurora, you know, think about where you are. I mean, there's a really good chance that you're going to be able to see the northern lights at some point. You know, so there's a lot of possible explanations for mysterious lights in Nahanni. But some of these witnesses insist that the lights moved intelligently.
Oh, yeah.
And anytime someone says a light appeared in the middle of nowhere and started moving in ways that it shouldn't, well, that's when I start paying attention. Okay. And speaking of things that get my attention and Adam's, let's talk about cryptids.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently Nahanni wasn't content with just having ghosts and disappearances and beheaded bodies and curses and mysterious lights. It needs a monster, too. So
always
we're going to talk about the Wahila.
Oh, yeah.
The Wahila is described as a gigantic wolf-like creature. It's usually white, but sometimes gray, and it's much larger than a normal wolf. It's powerfully built and long-legged, and it's reportedly capable of covering enormous distances through rugged terrain. Witnesses describe seeing something that looked wrong. Yeah, of all the things you could say, It just looked wrong. And I think everybody can understand that.
Well, yeah. Especially if somebody is trying to get you to describe something and you're freaked out by it.
Yeah.
Then you're like, well, it was wrong.
Yeah.
It just looked wrong.
Which always kind of, I think it's like that uncanny valley thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you see something that you should recognize and it kind of looks like that, but then it's just, there's something about it. You may not be able to put your finger on it, but it just doesn't look right.
Yeah. You know?
And so if you saw what appeared to be a giant wolf, you're looking at it going, that is a big wolf. But is it a wolf? It doesn't look right. Okay.
Right.
Not something impossible, just wrong. Like maybe a wolf that's been scaled up by like 25 or 50%. Okay. Just much larger, but way larger than what you would expect.
Yep.
Now, some people believe the Wahila is a surviving dire wolf. Others suggest that it's an unknown canine species, but you know, still some people think it's simply just an unusually large wolf that's gotten exaggerated through stories from, you know, frightened hikers and campers and hunters and whatever.
But hunters should know.
Yeah.
Like hikers, I'll give you, they may be freaked out because they may not see wolves a lot, but if you're hunting that area, you would think you would know how big the wolves can get and when something is off.
Yeah. I like the idea of it being a surviving dire wolf. I love, like, yeah, when we talked about, you know, the thylacine and,
mm-hmm,
you know, when you're talking about animals that aren't dinosaurs, you know, that,
right,
that had to live just millions and millions of years without being discovered. You know, think about where we are in Canada. I mean, the Canadian North is enormous. I mean, there are places up there where human beings almost never go.
Yeah.
So it's not like a dire wolf, you know, was roaming through a ranch in Montana. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There are populated areas. Yeah, there's remote areas in Montana. But there's very few areas where a human couldn't go if they, yeah, if they wanted to. There are wide parts of the Canadian North that people just don't go to. You know,
mm-hmm,
there's nothing there. There's no reason to go. It's too remote. It's too dangerous. It's too cold. It's too icy. Whatever. We don't need to go. So we're not. And,
yep,
the idea that a dire wolf or a different wolf species that developed, you know, on its own over time to be,
mm-hmm,
really, really large, it seems possible to me.
Oh, yeah.
And people claim that they've seen exactly that in Nahanni. I mean, it's... To me, that's a lot easier to believe than it's, you know, a spirit animal or anything like that, you know, that it's just a breed of wolf that's managed to go isolated and become ginormous.
Yeah, and we talk about it with Bigfoot in remote areas. You know, those are the places that we're like, yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a Bigfoot, it's going to be there.
Uh-huh.
So why not just a massive wolf or a ancient wolf species that has lived.
Yeah. But you bring that up and that is interesting. Out of all this research, didn't find a bunch of Bigfoot sightings.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Now that could be because there's not as many people going.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you know, a Bigfoot could really be out there and be like, this place is nice. There ain't a lot of humans coming up this, mm-hmm, way, you know.
So, and when they do, it's easy for me to hide.
That's right. Yeah, because it's so stinking big. And there's so many cliffs and canyons and caves that they're never going to see me, you know.
Yep.
I win again.
If I were a Bigfoot, I'd move there.
But I mean, yeah. So there's no really solid reports that I was able to find of, you know, a bunch of Bigfoot sightings,
mm-hmm.
but there are of these giant wolves. So what's going on in Nahanni? That's the real question, right? Because all of these mysteries we've talked about, they have potential explanations. You know, the deaths and the disappearances, the lights, the ghosts, even the cryptid sightings. Individually, they can all be explained. But when you look at them collectively, they kind of create something much larger. It's a reputation. It's mythology. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a sense that this part of Canada is different. Nahanni is different. And I think that's why these stories endure for so long. Not because the valley is actually haunted, not because there's monsters there, and not because there's some, you know, cursed treasure, but because it's one of the few places left where nature still feels bigger than us. Okay?
Yep.
That we are still visitors there, a place where we don't control the environment. And honestly, we still don't know everything. I mean, this might as well be the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what scares people about it, is it is so large and wild and untamed by humanity that when you experience that, you begin to feel very, very small. And that terrifies a lot of people, and rightly yeah. so. So, sure. you know, it's not necessarily the ghost. It's not necessarily the monsters or even the missing prospectors, but the realization that there are still places in the world where humans are not in charge. Okay. That yeah. it's still wild.
And you might be being chased by a giant wolf.
That's exactly right.
Who wants your head?
And he's buddies with that bear.
Mm-hmm. Now it all makes
That's
sense.
That's it. But you know, I love places like Nahanni, and you know, I hope they stay that way. You know,
yep.
it's just wild and free, and it is not dominated by, you know, humanity.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But it does lead to a lot of stories. So what do you guys think? Am I right? Is it just the vast wilderness that freaks people out and allows people to create these stories that you want to share around a campfire when you are out there? Or is there something more mysterious, and maybe that's why humanity never took it over, you know?
Or is there a creepy bear near you?
That's right.
I mean,
if you get that knock on your tent at 2 a.m, you know, you hear a grumble.
Hello.
You up?
Hello. Not again, Carl.
Don't unzip.
Not again.
Don't unzip the flap. Okay. But tell us what you think. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. There's thousands of people in there sharing opinions and stories and, you know, asking for help with paranormal things. Whatever. It's a great group. It's a good community, and you know, nobody's gonna look at you and go, "Boy, you sure are weird." Nah, we all are, because we like to hear these stories.
Right.
And check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com, and there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and you can become a patron. And thank you so much. And whatever you are able to do for as long as you can, like a month, you pick it up, grab some bonus episodes. It doesn't matter. It helps the show. It helps the show, and it allows Adam yep. and I to keep putting this out, you know, in a way that makes us proud. And so we thank you for that. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.